implications for me. I think the biggest one is understanding that we're entering the 21st century now with a new domain of social inequality. We've been focused on economic inequality. It's tremendously important. We now enter the 21st century where private surveillance capital has institutionalized asymmetries of knowledge unlike anything ever seen in human history. They know everything about us. We know almost nothing about them.
We want to thank you so much, Shoshana Zuboff, professor emerita at Harvard Business School, author of the new book, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks.
And what do you know? It's KBOO Portland. It is 5 o'clock on the dot, and the KBOO Evening News is next.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
The KBOO Evening News is brought to you by our community of volunteers. In other words, you, our listeners. We focus on news that you won't hear on commercial media, news that matters most to our community, stories pertaining to civil and human rights, global affairs, and politics. This is one way you as a listener can support us, but we are also grateful for the contributions you bring in. Donate $20 to KBOO today at kboo.fm/give, and you will be entered into the Ultimate KBOO Neighborhood Experience Raffle. Come join fellow volunteers in exploring our neighborhood with several gift cards to shop in our community and a meal and a night's stay right next door to the station. Donate at kboo.fm/give today to win. See full rules and details at kboo.fm/2019raffle.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, attacks against LGBTQ Portlanders are on the rise. We look at what's known, what's unknown, and why.
Another man has been fatally shot by the Vancouver police.
And the U.S. Consulate General in Israel has merged with the newly located U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem this month.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 1st, 2019. I'm Ray Bodwell.
And I'm Natasha Jean. Police yesterday in Vancouver, Washington, shot and killed a man who was reportedly waved a gun and shouted at passing motorists. Police responded to several 911 calls to find 29-year-old Michael Eugene Pierce standing at the corner of 12th and Jefferson. Molly Wickenhagen, a community member who knew Pierce, stated that he had been living on the streets and had a history of mental illness. According to family members, Pierce had been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia as a teenager but had stopped taking his prescribed medication because, he said, the medication made him feel like a zombie. There was some attempt at de-escalation between Pierce and the two officers before they fired the fatal shots. It was the second Vancouver police shooting in 2 weeks. Pierce was the father of a 5-year-old daughter.
A rally is set for tomorrow, March 2nd, as a show of support for a Portland man who is accused of driving his truck into protesters after a Patriot Prayer rally in downtown Vancouver during the summer of 2017. The rally is scheduled for 1 p.m. in front of the Clark County Courthouse at 1200 Franklin Street. The driver, 31-year-old Billy Wilson, claims that he was attempting to drive away from counter-protesters who were attacking him. However, Patriot Prayer counter-protesters disagree and say that Wilson intentionally sped toward the crowd as he suddenly rammed his vehicle into reverse, causing protesters to scramble and dive out of his way. Wilson was detained but not arrested at the scene. Patriot Prayer organizer Joey Gibson accused Clark County prosecutor Tony Golic of being a secret leftist extremist because, among other things, Golic attended Portland State University and didn't level charges against others at the rally. Wilson was not formally charged until February 2018. His charges are reckless endangerment and reckless driving. Both are gross misdemeanors and both carry maximum sentences of a year in jail or a $5,000 fine.
One of the most concerning local stories in Portland this year is the record increase in attacks against LGBTQ Portlanders. KBOO's Heather McCoy spoke this week with Portland Mercury's reporter Blair Stivenick about what is officially known about the incidents and why.
How many attacks have occurred, and how, and have members of Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys been fingered as perpetrators from the beginning?
Right, those are good questions. I first found out about these attacks much the same way other people did on social media. I think it was on Monday, February 11th. An account I follow on Twitter had tweeted a link to a GoFundMe page for a trans woman who had been assaulted near 15th and Morrison that past weekend. I tried to follow up with the PPB. At first, they didn't have a ton of info for me. More information came out later. That woman did file a police report. I believe it's the only attack that has a police report associated with it at this time. As far as how many attacks there have been, that's a difficult question to answer. I've heard estimates of 10 to 15, although it's really hard to get a firm number because people are hesitant to report to the police or even to the media. So it's really just been something we've seen popping up on social media and then that we've seen community members responding to.
And then going back to the Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer, what interactions have those two groups had with the LGBTQ community within the Portland area in the past?
Right. So Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys have never been friends with the LGBTQ community here in Portland. In 2017, members of Patriot Prayer were present at Pride. They were providing security to a known LGBTQ hate group called the Hell Shaking Street Preachers. Joey Gibson claimed at the time that he didn't support their message. He just wanted to support free speech, but it does beg the question of why it was so important to Patriot Prayer to protect that particular group at Pride.
So one of the odd stories, aspects to the story, that if it is indeed Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys that are behind these attacks, both of these groups tend to both organize usually online through Discord, the Discord channel or app, or through 4chan. And Antifa has been very successful for doxing these people in the past in very short order. I've only seen one piece of evidence, and it's very dubious at best, to tie them to these crimes. It was in the form of a fake hunting license, which states Antifa hunting permit, with smaller text, open season on all 58 genders. It was texted from a basically a white nationalist news group, quote-unquote news group. Have you seen any other additional evidence to attach these crimes to Proud Boys or Patriot Prayer?
Right. So I did see that screenshot. I've seen another screenshot of a known Patriot Prayer supporter appears to be expressing his support for these attacks or kind of laughing at them. But we're trying to be transparent in our reporting and, you know, say we really don't know who is responsible for these attacks. I know there are a lot of community members who suspect Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys, but that's not something we've been able to confirm.
That was KBOO's Heather McCoy and Portland Mercury reporter Blair Stenvik.
In an interesting twist, Michael German, the man who butt heads with Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler over whether the city should withdraw from the Joint Terrorism Task Force, is now a key resource for the mayor. Last month, Michael German, a 16-year FBI veteran, argued in favor of leaving the Joint Terrorism Task Force, while Mayor Ted Wheeler opposed that. But now the mayor's office has consulted with German on how to investigate police bias at city protests, the Oregonian reported today. German had worked as an undercover FBI agent infiltrating terrorist groups, including white supremacists, but he became a whistleblower after observing massive FBI civil rights abuses. German said, quote, "If the police think they've done the right thing, they shouldn't have a problem with an investigation," end quote.
Wednesday mornings at City Hall are reserved for citizen communications. Anyone can sign up. You have 3 minutes to speak. As many as 5 citizens can speak each week. Last Wednesday, 4 of the 5 slots had the same topic: why does the city ignore grassroots organizations' proven ability to help the houselessness? KBOO's Joe Meyer is covering housing and filed this report.
Housing activists from St. John's stacked the Wednesday morning communication session at City Hall this week. The grassroots activists feel they are crowded out by large players in the not-for-profit industrial complex, and that these corporations continue to underdeliver promised services with no accountability. They also promise to build a village with or without city support.
163, request of Mimi Gurman to address council regarding city ignores grassroots orgs' proven ability to help houseless with villages.
What I would like to say is that there will be a village in St. John's that is put up by us, the people, because the city will not have anything to do with it, which is very unfortunate. It's not unfortunate to us. We know what we're doing. We know how to take care of people. We do it every day. We do it every night. We've been not sleeping over the last few weeks because we've been busy getting people to shelters, making sure people have blankets, making sure the people who don't want to go to shelters for their reasons are okay, that we have no deaths as much as we can possibly help that to happen. And a village will be erected. I don't know when, but when it's erected, I expect no pushback from the city. We have come to you, I have come to you repeatedly for the last 2.5 years, telling you what we need in St. John's. We are the desert in St. John's. There are no services. I speak to the people who live outside. I know just about everybody who is in St. John's, including the new people who have arrived on our streets. I speak with them every day. No one comes to them to check in. No one comes to them to ask them if they are on list for housing. No one comes to them to find out if they are being fed. There is nowhere to be fed. This morning, I was waiting for the bus in St. John's to come here. A man named Robert came to me. I said, "Did you want to go to the shelter?" He said, "I've been to the shelter, but they throw people out of the shelter." And he said, "Last night, they threw out a woman with her dog." I said, "Francesca?" He said, "Yes, they have thrown out Francesca numerous times. Her dog weighs 1 pound. Francesca weighs about 2 pounds. She's a very, very small woman." This is what Do Good Multnomah does in St. John's to our people, people I care about. In St. John's. Those doors locked during this weather emergency last night at 10 p.m. I'm pretty sure that's illegal during a weather crisis in shelters. So when that village goes up, I'm giving you my transparent notice that that's going to happen.
My name's Ree Campbell. I'm the co-executive director of Boots on the Ground PDX. Unfortunately, one point of contact has run amok. I'm not going to name any names, but our people are being harmed. And for some reason, the one point of contact office is helping a city contractor gain new contracts. Something smells in Denmark, folks. Putting that in your ear. Next point of business. What Mimi's talking about, I have been told by Jost themselves the reason they don't want to even take a look at our camp model is because it's too much work. They literally want to write checks and be done with it. They are writing checks to orgs that are consistently 40 to 60% under their yearly stated goals. This is a problem for me. We went through the county's RFPQ. We missed their criteria by 6 points. We were told that there would be remediation process after the thing was over. Never happened. We were never re-engaged. I gave 75 hours last week. I am sorry that I'm crying. I'm exhausted. We're doing outreach during the day, and we're doing shelter shifts at night. This leads into the affordable housing. Sorry, I told you we're everywhere right now. I voted yes on the affordable housing bond, but here's the problem. Affordable housing are not low to moderate income units. In the last year, we have built well over 5,000 affordable units. We have built 500 low to moderate income units. In that same amount of time, 2,000 more people have come out on the streets. How did Homer Williams get $1.5 million of housing money? He didn't go through the RFPQ. Meanwhile, Rich Rogers' 80 units of permanent supportive housing was scrapped for want of $1 million. I understand the money came from TPI, but Homer is a millionaire. Why is he getting money, public funds? I'm sorry he saw somebody get shot in front of his building, but he's a millionaire. He doesn't get to use public funds for his own personal therapy. I have to vote no on the next affordable bond measure if we can't get a check on how these funds are being spent.
Those were voices of St. John's housing activists at City Hall earlier this week. The corporate-based housing model is not working in Portland. Grassroots organizations closest to the folks in need can't get a couple bucks for blankets, while millions of tax dollars are squandered on politically connected, service-denying corporations. And this is Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
Washington State Governor Jay Inslee announced his candidacy for president today. Inslee is a former congressman who is credited with a statewide economic expansion that generated tens of thousands of jobs in the corporate sector. However, Inslee's major policy goals have been around climate change and the environment, but they have consistently failed. Inslee's work to get the first carbon tax on the ballot came up short twice and also failed in the state legislature. His new campaign video shows that climate change and reducing greenhouse gases remain at the center of his agenda.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin after this broadcast. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali Kolhatkar. Then at 7, it's The Struggle with Alyssa Paria. Tonight's weather, cloudy with lows around 29 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, 46 degrees and mostly sunny. Today in history, in 1692, the Salem witch hunt began in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. 19 people were put to death, but by the end of that year, local officials reformed court practices to stop sensationalized testimony in the court, and no more executions were held. The quote of the day is from novelist Walter Kern, who said, "Everyone loves a witch hunt, as long as it's someone else's witch being hunted."
The movie reviewing website Rotten Tomatoes this week banned users from reviewing films in advance. That might sound like a mild move on their part, but it is being hailed as a giant step for equity and diversity in film. That's because the site has been ground zero for racist, sexist, and homophobic attacks against film studios moving away from straight white male lead characters. Over the past few years, movies like Black Panther and Star Wars: The Last Jedi have been viciously attacked by online trolls, and their actors have been attacked as well. Brie Larson stars in Captain Marvel, the first Marvel superhero film directed by a woman. The film recasts the legendary superhero as a female fighter pilot, and during her publicity tours, Larson has spoken out in favor of more diverse film reviewers. During a speech last year, Larson said, quote, "Am I saying I hate white dudes? No, I'm not. But if you make a movie that is a love letter to women of color, there's an insanely low chance a woman of color will have a chance to see your movie and review your movie," end quote.
The governor of Virginia's wife, Pam Northam, has publicly apologized for giving visiting African American teenagers cotton when they toured the Virginia governor's mansion. Pam Northam, whom warned her husband, Governor Ralph Northam, not to moonwalk in front of a crowd at a press conference concerning the scandal over a racist yearbook photo, which prompted accusations of racism and numerous calls for his resignation, Pam Northam's staff said she did not single out black students for the cotton balls. Governor Northam says he will dedicate the rest of his term in office to racial equity.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. After years of negotiations, five Yellowstone bison have been transferred into the hands of tribal officials on the Fort Peck Reservation in Montana. The tribes built a $500,000 quarantine facility to guarantee the bison are disease-free. As Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports, other tribes are looking at Fort Peck as an example.
The National Park Service approved the tribal quarantine program last spring, but Fort Peck wasn't able to get the bison until now because of negotiations with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's inspection program over how early in the quarantine process they could transfer the animals. Eastern Shoshone member Jason Baldes is the tribal buffalo coordinator for the National Wildlife Federation. He says it's taken years for Fort Peck to get the bison because people have trouble thinking of the species as wildlife.
We've done pronghorn antelope reintroductions and bighorn sheep here on the reservation, and you know that's a matter of going and rounding up the animals and bringing them here and putting them in their habitat. For some reason, when it comes to buffalo, we have this notion that we've got to bring them in and treat them like cows.
The tribes are working to reduce the number of bison killed when they migrate out of the national park. 600 to 900 bison are killed each year because of concern they'll spread brucellosis to cattle. Baldes says Fort Peck is leading the charge to develop bison quarantine facilities, but that he hopes other tribes can do so in the future, like his own on Wind River Reservation in Wyoming.
We don't have to deal with the issue of crossing state boundaries. It would provide jobs for people here, and of course, buffalo are important for us culturally.
The Eastern Shoshone tribe expects to receive some bison from Fort Peck as part of a tribe-to-tribe agreement this coming spring. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards.
The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Board has once again voted to pass an emergency rule that puts into practice the new Lake Superior Fishing Agreement. As Danielle Kading reports, the board reconsidered the rule in December.
The Red Cliff and Bad River bands of Lake Superior Chippewa signed a new agreement in December with the DNR for management of the Lake Superior fishery. Scott Breading with the Apostle Islands Sport Fishermen's Association says the deal puts pressure on the fishery with a new October whitefish season.
It will not protect the resource because it lacks even the basic biological study.
Brad Ray with the Wisconsin DNR says they will monitor the impacts of the three-week season.
We will be able to, after that 21 days, sit down and look at and get an estimate of how many brown trout were caught, how many coho were caught, and see if that number is too high.
Board members voiced frustration over a lack of data on the October whitefish season. Natural Resources Board Chair Fred Prane says passage of an emergency rule doesn't guarantee a permanent rule will take its place.
The department believes, and I concur, that they will have time to go back, sit down with the tribes, and at least voice some of the concerns this board has. Will it modify the agreement substantially? Probably not. Will it maybe tweak this agreement a little bit to give us a little more, you know, ability to enforce our resources and monitor? I hope so.
The board voted to amend the emergency rule to eliminate the October whitefish season for non-tribal commercial fishers. A Bad River spokeswoman says the tribe declined to comment. Red Cliff's tribal chairman has said the agreement protects the Lake Superior fishery and their treaty rights. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading in Superior, Wisconsin.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
On Thursday night, Somali militants from the group Al-Shabaab launched an attack on a hotel downtown Mogadishu, killing at least 29 people. Members of the group fled the scene and besieged a nearby building for 15 hours before Somali government special forces shot and killed the militants earlier today. The Al-Shabaab group has repeatedly tried to overthrow the Western-led government of Somalia by executing terrorist attacks. The U.S. Africa Command and the U.S. administration announced that it performed airstrikes in the region, which have killed around 83 militants last month.
The U.S. Consulate General in Israel is closing its office in East Jerusalem, and it will be merged with the newly relocated U.S. Embassy on the west side of the city. The consulate's East Jerusalem office has served as a de facto representative of the U.S. to the Palestinian people, providing services such as visas, birth registrations, and passports. It is also responsible for gathering information about the local government, civil society, and cultural organizations in order to promote the embassy's interest with the local population. With the merging of the East Jerusalem consulate with the U.S. Embassy in the West Jerusalem, U.S. Ambassador to Israel and longtime supporter of illegal settlements in the West Bank, David Friedman, now heads all diplomatic relations between the Palestinians and Israel. The relocation of the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, as announced by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo last year, and is seen as an anti-Palestinian move by the Palestinians and the international community.
Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau shuffled his cabinet today for the second time in 6 weeks after a minister, alleging government wrongdoing, resigned, the New York Times reported. The Veterans Affairs Minister, Jody Wilson-Raybould, quit earlier this year after occupying her position for less than a month. On Wednesday, she testified that when she was a justice minister last year, government officials from Trudeau's Liberal Party leaned on her to help a construction firm avoid corruption trial. That prompted the Conservative Party leader to demand Trudeau's resignation. New polls show the incident is starting to hurt Trudeau's Liberal Party ahead of federal elections this October. Trudeau denies wrongdoing. Since the story broke, he has moved around several cabinet ministers. In a break from Trudeau's tradition of taking questions, he decided not to afterwards.
The essence of Portland has been recreated in Tokyo's Shibuya Ward. Local business owners have converted their community to mimic Portland culture. Within 6 square miles, the Shibuya Ward hosts a Burnside Street Cafe, a Columbia Sportswear store, an open-air farmer's market, and a PDX taproom serving Deschutes, Rogue, and Ninkasi on draft. Satomi Komazaki, who opened Northwest-themed pub in Tokyo, had this to say about Portland culture. Quote, "No one thinks they are in competition with each other. I think that's the Portland spirit. Everybody's in it together," end quote. The Shibuya Ward is the first area of Japan to have recognized same-sex marriage.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 1st, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team tonight for tonight's newscast is Tammy Habadis, Leda Ganji, Joe Meyer, Dresden Devura, Miriam Widman, and Heather McCoy. Our engineer is Sam Bodman. The interim director of the Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. Also, the KBOO News needs more volunteers. Tell your friends. Interested people can email lisa@kbu.org. This Monday night is the next KBOO volunteer orientation. That's Monday, March 4th at 6 p.m. at the beautiful KBOO Studios located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. A podcast and transcript of tonight's newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Natasha Jean.
And I'm Ray Bodwell. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, host Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey take your calls. At 9, it's the Old Mole Variety Hour. And at 10 on Locus Focus, host Barbara Bernstein speaks with Damon Mott-Story, Communications Director for the Power Past Fracked Gas Campaign. Let me repeat that. Power Past Fracked Gas Campaign, and Dr. Pat Delaquil with 350 PDX about the pros and cons of a clean energy jobs bill being considered by the state legislature. At 11, Mayo Clinic Radio discusses screening and treatment for colorectal cancer for Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Then at 11:30, it's Madness Radio, voices and visions from outside mental health. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the button marked Donate. Good night, Natasha. Good night, Sam. Ray.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Sam.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the summit between Donald Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un ended without an official agreement. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? You won't learn from reading the New York Times editorial, which both lauds a step-by-step process by which both sides agree to take corresponding action, and says that outreach to dictators like Mr. Kim erode the moral foundation that for generations has supported American diplomacy and the notion of America's role in the world. The last thing you'll get from U.S. media's assessment of the prospect of peace on the Korean Peninsula, what Koreans think. We'll talk about the just-concluded summit with journalist Tim Shorrock.